First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Hello, anybody there? Hello.
Dale, are you there?
Yes, sir. I didn't know where you were, Ed.
Man, I apologize to our listeners. Apparently, the sound problem was on my end. There's a little button down here that I finally looked at because I couldn't figure out why we couldn't hear you. So my apologies. Nobody heard anything I had to say, so that's okay. Nothing new. Not that I'm important, right?
You're echoing bad, Ed, too. There's a redo.
Well, I'm kind of ashamed. This is something that rarely happens, but there's a little hidden button I've got that's cut off, and I don't hit it that often, and apparently it was cut off. I just now noticed the light on it because I was looking everywhere trying to check out the audio. I guess I need to put that in a more convenient place. My apologies to the listeners and to you, actually, as well, Dale. I apologize. I tell you, we're looking at everything going on today, and Kentucky Attorney General Jack Conway has appointed a special prosecutor to investigate David James, to find out if David James is legal to be a Metro Council member and a University of Louisville police officer at the same time. What does that mean to you?
And you're echoing bad. I don't know if you saw me in the chat room. Every 2 seconds I'm hearing what we're saying over and over again.
Well, I'm looking at you now. I'm not hearing any echo on my end at all. I don't know why that would be. We'll play some games with the some sound buttons here in a second and see what we got. I'm not hearing an echo. So what do you think about this deal with Jack Conway finally appointing a special prosecutor to go after David James?
Well, he's running for governor, so he prayed about it and thought about it and talked to his wife about it, so now he's got his name out there.
You know, I kind of expected that. I tell you, it's really disturbing because, you know, he appoints Commonwealth Attorney Laura Witt Donnell as the special prosecutor. She is a Commonwealth Attorney for Shelby, Spencer, and Anderson counties. If there's no further proof that we need that this is nothing more than a political witch hunt, then let's realize this, and it's very clear. Attorney for David James, Todd Lewis, said he thinks that Donald is a respected attorney, but Todd Lewis is very upset that he didn't know about her appointment as special prosecutor until WFPL called him to seek comment. So the Attorney General's office, Jack Conway, and Special Prosecutor Commonwealth Attorney Laura Witt Donnell decided they wanted to play this in the media before Todd Lewis, the attorney for David James, even knew anything. How pathetic is that?
It's pretty standard operation for the Democrats.
Well, I agree. And as everybody knows, this is nothing more than a witch hunt by Jim King and you know, unfortunately, Michael Connell. It started with Michael Connell anyway. Now it's Tom Wine and then back to Jack Conway. But, you know, Jim King runs Louisville. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. Most people already know that or believe it. I'm one of them. But it's very disturbing that, once again, we need political proof that Conway is doing nothing more than playing politics with the office. And yesterday he made the announcement that he's going to run for governor. Like, we need the Aqua Buddha, you know, the loose in the loafers, you know, pretty boy Jack Conway, who's never done a damn thing in his life, run for governor and spend all this time and more money trying to investigate David James for nothing. Because, quite frankly, there are three people that have taken dual oaths of office as well. There's three legislative staff members. Or I'm sorry, three Metro Council members, that have taken the same oath. They've taken conflicting oaths of office. So why is it that those are okay and the same thing with David James is not? Because David James is not a police officer for the city of Louisville. He's a police officer for the University of Louisville.
Well, I've said for many, many days that I don't even like what James is doing because he's still double dipping. I think it's pathetic that we pay taxes and we're basically paying them twice because University of Louisville is a state school. But again, they point out one person doing it, and they have a lot of fingers pointing back at them. So it's common for Democrats to want to double dip, and some Republicans, you look at the ones who are running for Metro Council to try to enrich their state rep or state senate pension now. So I don't like any of them doing it, but for him to point the finger at James doing it when there's others doing far worse things is a bit hypocritic.
Well, see, and I agree with you totally. I mean, that is the thing. I mean, we could talk about the double dipping thing, and yeah, that's a problem that we both agree on. But in this particular case, this is picking and choosing who you want to victimize, and that's the problem with me, is that Jim King and David James can't stand each other because David James won't carry Jim King's water, so he works with his good friend Michael Connell to come up with a way to start this crap back in February, and you know, it's went back and forth, and now we've got a special prosecutor, and I'll be honest with you, I have no faith in special prosecutors that gets appointed from Jack Conway's office. And I tell you why, because I spent 2 years with the Jim King case, had all the evidence to have him indicted and brought up on charges. Hart McGibbon was a special prosecutor assigned to that case, flat out told me himself that he had plenty of evidence. It would be easy. It would be one of the easiest indictments he ever got, but he still refused to go forward with the case. He still refused to go and indict Jim King. Now, his logic was, well, I'm not sure I can guarantee a conviction, so I'm not going to indict the guy. Well, that's a load of crap. Is there any prosecutor anywhere that tries a case that they can guarantee a conviction?
Well, it's typical, again, it's the typical procedures with the Democrat Party and the establishment in Louisville, and the first thing I think of is you can go back 16 years ago when my good friend Doug Hawkins was running for state representative against Charlie, the drunken elf Miller, and Miller was running the campaign out of high school, and Doug tried to tell the Board of Elections, they didn't care. Doug tried to tell the established Republican Party, they didn't care. Nobody cared that basically in an age that not many people were on the internet yet in 1998, and I'm the one that discovered and brought Doug's attention, that on Charlie Miller's homepage, there was this phone number to the front office of the high school, and nothing was ever done about it. That's just the way the Unum Party works here.
And they just went after David Johnson for allowing a guy to use the property for his lawn equipment, and he was cutting their grass for free, you know, over at PRP High School. So it's crazy the way that these double standards apply, but I have no faith whatsoever in Jack Conway and the fact that they're allowing this double standard to exist, all because they have some political motives, not doing what's right. It's just one more example of why we don't need a governor like Jack Conway. As I mentioned, Conway made it official yesterday morning. He sent an online video out to his so-called supporters. I'm not a supporter of Jack Conway, but I got the online video sent to me by him. These guys, they've still got me listed as a Democrat, Dale, on all of their voter rolls. So how often do you think they update? I haven't been a Democrat in years. It's hilarious.
They don't seem to update much. I mean, I think if nothing else, the Democratic Party primary for governor, and let's face it, in this state, unfortunately, I hope this is not one of those years next year, but in this state, we know that Democrats have run the governorship, 40 of the last 44 years, 39 of the last 43 years, how you want to say it. If you throw in Ernie Fletcher 4 years, you hadn't had a Republican governor since Louis Nunn, and we know that Democratic primary for governor, you want to talk about a freak show, you're going to have Jack Conway, Adam Edlin, who else is going to jump in there? Creed Llewellyn stayed out, and she had more balls than any of the guys running. Am I leaving somebody out yet? Ben Chandler
Jerry Abrams is not going to run. He knows better. But, you know, I know Adam Edlin is going to run. I'm sure of that. You know, I'm really not sure. I think that Greg Stumbold may actually try it. I'm not exactly sure. Stumbold basically tried to tell the whole world he wants all these candidates to wait until after the November elections before they make any plans, and I fully believe that if the Republicans pick up some state House seats in November, that Greg Stumbold will jump into the governor's race because he won't be able to control everything like he does now. We're going to see how that one works out.
If Stumbold's saying that, I hadn't heard that, but if Stumbold's saying he wants people to wait until November, that may be the first thing I've ever agreed with Stumbold on, because I do think that all candidates should wait until this year's elections are over, but I'm sure if he's saying it, it's something to benefit him.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. And it's interesting. Conway's selection to run as his running mate is State Rep. Sani Overly out of Paris, Kentucky. She is the Democratic Caucus chairwoman. You know, this to me reeks because Sani Overly is not well known. You know, there's not a lot of people in Kentucky that would give two scoots about her. There's nobody outside of Louisville that cares about Conway. So, I mean, it's clearly obvious why he went outside of Louisville to pick a running mate. But to pick Sani Overly to me is nothing more than appeasement. He wasn't looking for people that were going to be great for the job. He was told to take her because she's a female, and they want the female vote because they know Jack Conway is tainted. That's what it looks like to me. This really doesn't look like a great team, and I really honestly would have a hard time believing Jack Conway would win governor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just me.
That's what said the primary is going to be a lot of fun because we know we're going to have Conway and Edlin. We hear rumors of Ben Chandler. Ben Chandler was on CN2 wishy-washy about what he was going to do. Ben Chandler sounded about as indecisive on what he's going to do. He's about as indecisive as when you ask Shelley May her opinion on anything. You see in an article in the Courier Journal about that, how Shelley May refuses to take a stance on anything. Big shock there. But Ben Chandler wouldn't admit if he was going to run for governor or not. So to me, if he didn't rule it out, then he's considering it. So like I said, Creed Llewellyn was more man than any of these guys running, and she would have been the most honest Democrat. I know that sounds like an oxymoron. She would have been the most trustworthy Democrat running, but now we're going to have a fun little primary. Imagine the mud that could be slung between Edlin and Conway and Stumbo and Chandler.
Well, I agree with you there, and quite honestly, I also agree with your assessment of Creed Llewellyn. Creed Llewellyn plays political hardball as well, but I tell you, she is very honest. You know, and what she does. And I thought she did a great job as state auditor, and I think she would have been a very credible person to run for governor on the Democratic side. You know, when we look at this, Conway is laying out this campaign platform. He says he's going to focus on education and jobs. He talks about, you know, we can build a future of opportunity we can all be proud of. You know, then he goes on to talk about, you know, he knows how to create jobs and all of this junk. And I sit here and I laugh about that. Jack Conway has been a spoon-fed, silver-tongued devil since he was born.
Yep.
This guy has never worked an honest job in his life. He doesn't know the first thing about creating jobs. You have people in this race who have worked the private sector, who have not been a politician their whole adult life. You know, you take people like Hal Heiner, for example, on the Republican side. Hal Heiner is a commercial developer. If there's anybody that knows about how to create jobs, I certainly believe Hal Heiner would probably be the best one in the race on any side. You know, but when you look at this is nothing more than a typical spoon-fed, silver-tongued devil Democrat politician who has been groomed to do nothing more than be a career politician to carry the water of the power beings in the old guard Democrat Party here. Would you agree with that?
No, I agree with it. And again, I will say that even though we don't know who all is going to run yet, I still think they should wait until November to file. We expect that my friend James Comer is going to run. I think James Comer, if he wins the Republican primary, will break that streak and actually become our only second Republican governor in Kentucky in 40 years. I think if Comer wins the primary and there's not any more neocons put in to run interference, kind of like the way they did with David Williams, which wouldn't surprise me if they put a third or fourth horse in to either help Heiner win or help someone else beat Jamie and Hal. But I think if Jamie Comer can win this primary, he will become governor because he's got all the momentum on his side. He took a stance on hemp when nobody in the state government would stand up against the power brokers, and he's already said that he's not going to be an establishment hack. I can tell you I had a private message conversation with Jamie back when he first got elected into the Agriculture Commissioner's office, and I told him, I said, whatever you do, just don't go along with the establishment. Don't become one of their puppets. He said, not a chance. He would never be an establishment puppet. So I think James Comer, you know, will win the governorship. I know that's bold saying it over a year ahead of time if he is the Republican nominee, because the Democrat side is just laughable.
Well, I tell you honestly, you know, if the Democrats don't have Adam Edelin as their candidate, I think the Republicans are going to win no matter who their opponent is. And I agree with you on Jamie Comer. I think Jamie Comer is a class act. And when you talk about part of that establishment mentality, and he said he'd never be that guy, I think the first thing he did when he became the agriculture secretary was very, very valid proof of that. The first thing he did was order a complete audit of that office and rid himself of any burdens or any problems from Richie Farmer, who is a beloved Republican and beloved Kentuckian that led to Richie Farmer going to jail. He wasn't going to stand there with the status quo and have his hands tainted, and he proved that by going after somebody the caliber of Richie Farmer as far as reputation was concerned. So I think Jamie Comer has already proven that, and
well,
everybody knows.
He's proven he's serious about the issues, Ed, that will help Kentucky. You know, we've been talking about hemp for a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
We go back several years ago. I wasn't right on board with hemp. I mean, I can tell you my friends at Take Back Kentucky are the ones who convinced me on hemp and kind of changed my mind on that. My good friend John Riley, who's running for judge executive in Spencer County, hopefully he wins that primary next week or two. But he and the other guys at Take Back Kentucky got me interested in the issue. And I can tell you a story on a Saturday night, a rainy Saturday night in Old Louisville, when there was a film being shown at this tiny little theater that nobody in the Republican Party would ever know anything about. And James Comer showed up there, and he knew how many votes are you going to get? How many votes in the Republican primary for ag commissioner are you going to get going to a group of hippies, if you will, in Old Louisville on a Saturday night? But he was serious about the issue, and that's why he was there.
Oh, sure. And I totally agree with you there. You know, what will be interesting, and I know we're getting the cart ahead of the horse here, But how interesting would it be to have Louisvillian Jack Conway win the Democratic primary and Louisvillian Hal Heiner win the Republican primary? Louisville is going to have a governor at that point. And everybody in the state hates Louisville. So that's an interesting scenario. But I certainly hope, and I'll tell you this, I honestly believe that if Adam Edelin is the only competition against Jack Conway wins. Not because Adam Edelin can't beat him, But I tell you, we see so many rigged elections in this town trying to make sure we take care of our insiders that Jack Conway is. It would not surprise me, and I hate to say that. Maybe I sound like some kind of a daggone conspiracy theorist or something, but if Jack Conway and Adam Edelin go head-to-head in that Democratic primary, if I was Adam Edelin and I lost the day after that primary, I would spend whatever money it took to hand count each and every paper ballot that ever came through any precinct. I really would, because it would not surprise me that these Frankfort insiders, of which Jack Conway is a part of, and I think Jack Conway is as crooked as anybody, that, you know, he would get that kind of a situation. I really do. And speaking of crooked, you know, we've got some other news going on. You know, the Legislative Ethics Commission had basically let Joe Arnold off in their commission hearing in April. Joe Arnold, of course, we know was a former state rep who was accused of sexual harassment and all kinds of other things by three different people. The Ethics Commission voted 4-1 in favor of guilt, but because they had to have five votes, he basically got off. Well, it was interesting because there's so much public backlash on this situation. Elmer George, of course, is owned and controlled by Allison Lundgren Grimes and vice versa, so he does what he's told by the party. He was the one who voted against getting rid of Joe Arnold last month. But amazingly, the Legislative Ethics Commission kept open the possibility of recharging Arnold, and they did. They recharged Arnold, and according to the Courier-Journal article today, today, former state rep John Arnold was found guilty of three different violations of the Legislative Code of Ethics. The vote this time was 5-1. Miraculously, one no vote showed up to vote this time. Elmer George, of course, was the one who had voted no the last time and did so this time as well. He gets a penalty of a $1,000 fine, which is nothing, and a public reprimand for each violation. But, of course, he's now resigned his seat, so I'm not sure what that does. What do you think about this? Did the public finally prove we can do something here? Do you think this is going to go further into criminal charges? What's your thoughts?
Well, I guess this guy hadn't made the right backroom deals and handshakes with the Democratic Party, because this is the kind of stuff we don't expect a Democrat to get busted for. So for him to get found guilty 4-1, I don't know what would happen on the criminal side. This is a Democrat-run House of Representatives that didn't want to do anything about this. They want to sweep this under the rug, and finally some media people started talking about it. I guess we had some slow news days, and they said, damn, we're going to have to talk about this Democrats' ethics violation. So they say, I don't know what else to contribute it to, because they usually cover up for Democrats. So I guess he didn't write the right number of checks for the right number of zeros on the end to the party executive committee, because they're kind of hanging him out to dry. So if what he's done is true, then he should definitely go. I mean, I thought it was interesting reading about these three girls whose names I can almost pronounce who are holding him responsible, and they brought God into it. I know you'd be happy about that they were praising God about this. And I'm thinking, yeah, because God really gives a damn about a state legislator in Kentucky what he does.
Well, you know, it's interesting here, because I tell you, they hang him out to dry because they had no choice. I'll tell you why that is. Allison Lundgren Grimes. Because as soon as he was let off last month, the first thing everybody was talking about, including us, was the fact that the vote was 4-1, and it was clearly obvious it should have been a unanimous vote. And then we did the research and found out that Elmer George had maxed out his contributions to Allison Lundgren Grimes, that his son is heavily involved and one of the primary people in Allison Lundgren Grimes' campaign. But more importantly, we found out that John Arnold, right after he resigned his seat in shame because these charges were brought up against him, right after he resigned that seat, he also gave Allison Lundgren Grimes a campaign contribution.
Yep.
So the Democrats had to prop up Allison Lundgren Grimes. So as soon as all this went public, it was a day after all of this stuff went public that they decided they could retry this case in the next hearing, which was today. So this is why he was let off. It's not that he didn't spend enough zeros. He bought all the people he was supposed to buy, but it's just too much baggage to carry for Allison Lundgren Grimes, Allison Wonderland Grimes, I should say, into a general election in November. So I thought that's why they hung him out to dry.
Back that he gave her.
Yep. But that's why they hung him out to dry.
She's not giving back the contribution. So I guess
that
kind of makes my point. I thought they would keep it hidden and keep it under wraps, because I didn't think they want anybody to know that this, whatever you want to call him, I don't know if he's not a convicted criminal yet. I didn't think they'd want anybody to know that this ethics violator gave big money to Allison. That's why I thought they'd cover him up more.
Well, the situation is, I mean, his attorney is screaming that he suffers from dementia, and that's what all this is over. You know, if he suffers from dementia, he's sexually harassing people in the hallways for years, he's had dementia so long, then what is he doing serving in the first damn place? If he was known to have dementia by anybody, now he's trying to use that as the excuse. If he was known to have dementia, then he wasn't qualified to serve. He wasn't of sound mind, period. So, you know, that is one of the things that always bothers me with elected officials, is if they are not of sound mind, then they still get to serve. You know, and the second part of that, real simply, is, you know, there's not going to be any criminal charges. There's not going to be. This they want behind them. And I am just as disturbed as you are that Alison Lundgren Grimes has not went out publicly, made a statement, and gave that money back. She will now, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and I think me and you talked about it then. You know, of course, he's going to be retried. The only question we had at that point was whether they were going to find him guilty or not, if they were going to get more people to show up as part of the ethics commission.
She's not going to say anything in public yet because Alison Lundgren Grimes doesn't take a public stance on anything. I mean, she's like the Shelley May of the Democratic Party. She doesn't stand up and believe in anything. So I don't know why they nominated her. Like I asked you a couple of weeks back, was she truly the best candidate, or was it just because of who her daddy was?
It's all because of who her daddy was, name recognition, and the fact that they wanted to put a female. They had already screwed up by putting Ashley Judd up. Talking about Ashley Judd. They had to have a female to satisfy the female base, which is all this is about. And that may sound sexist, folks, and I apologize if it does, because I'm not a sexist person. But really, truthfully, that is exactly what they are trying to do. They're trying to set the stage because they think if they can get Alison Lundgren Grimes in that position, then you have Hillary Clinton come in 2016, that the Democrats have maintained power because they're this all-inclusive group of which they are anything but. And Representative John Arnold, Democrat, proves that. But I thought it was really interesting that she didn't give the money back. And she will take a public stance when it's beneficial for her to take a public stance. Usually that's about, you know, a month or two after everybody has pushed her so hard she has no choice because she knows it's costing her votes. The only time it's beneficial for her to take a public stance is when she knows she's losing votes, not because she wants to earn votes, which is a big difference. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break, and we come back, we'll get into some more things. Interesting development on absentee ballots, and we'll talk about that when we get back. Folks, listen to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. ErniesPrintShop.com, 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Back at the Ed Springson Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. For you guys who are just joining us, 858-683-1326 and 502-805-0334 are the numbers. For you guys that are listening to you, please hit that number one on your dial pad. We certainly appreciate you being here. And if you don't want to talk to us, that's fine. Go ahead and sign in and use the live chat. We always have the live chat open for those who don't really want to talk on air. You can join into there if you want to. It's wide open. You can sign in with your Facebook or your Twitter account as well. So there's all kinds of opportunities to be heard. Moving on, Dale, I tell you, one of the things that we always talk about, we mentioned at the top of the show, actually, was the fact that, you know, the Democrats have outdated polls. So do the Republicans, or outdated voter lists, I should say. But there's a reason I talk about that early, because anybody that's running for office, all you got to do is order a list of registered voters.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have their addresses, you'll know where they're at, you know how they voted, blah, blah, blah. You'll have their whole voting history. Well, the reason this became an issue, or it's really something to talk about, is in Covington, Kentucky, Republican Kentucky Senate candidate Deb Sheldon sued the county clerks of Campbell and Bracken counties. She also sued Secretary of State Allison Lundigan Grimes and Attorney General Jack Conway to challenge a state law that was passed in 2013. This state law shields the names and addresses of anybody who applied for absentee ballots until after the election. Now, why is this an issue? Well, I tell you, for me, if all of these people named above and every candidate, all you have to do is order a copy of the voter rolls, you have all the personal information that you can possibly get. You've got a name, you've got an address, all of these different things. The law was passed in 2013 because people were complaining that, hey, if I get an absentee ballot, then people will have my name and address and know if I'm home or not. Now, the reality is nobody knows when anybody goes on vacation. Just because you have an absentee ballot doesn't mean you're out of town and not home. That's nothing. That's no more to me than just somebody who just don't feel like going and standing at the polling center. All right, so they passed the law to protect the privacy of the handful of people who request absentee ballots. And one of the things that Senate candidate Deb Sheldon basically brought up was that, you know, she was concerned, which we know is garbage, but she was concerned that soldiers, the sailors, you know, our military members and stuff like that would not receive information from the candidates back home that they're going to be voting on because nobody knew how to get a hold of them. And I think that that's a legitimate complaint, and I don't understand why you would pass this law to protect absentee voters. Why are you just saying no voters list can be given out to anybody? Why don't we just cut them all off, cut every candidate off? Go door-to-door the old-fashioned way. So if we're worried about protecting people's privacy.
Well, if you're voting, I mean, from what I understand, and there's a lot of laws that need to be changed in regards to voting. We talked about a lot of those on this show. If you're voting, it's a public act. Therefore, I don't know if I would want it to be private, the voting records. But the problem is there's so much stuff you can get out there on the Internet, and most people put too much crap about themselves out there on the Internet anyway. So that's usually where that kind of stuff originates, but I definitely don't think that the people are voting absentee to avoid lines, because this is Kentucky. Our voter turnout's never over 20%, so they don't have long lines in Kentucky when it comes to voting. So I guess I haven't really weighed that out to see what I really feel about that. I don't think voting records should be suppressed, but there are a lot of people out there who are surprised that all that information is public, because they're just ignorant. They don't understand that those are public records. So I guess I haven't really developed an opinion on it yet.
Well, for me personally, though, I mean, my information is public record because I'm a registered voter.
Yep.
So what is the difference between me and somebody who's seeking an absentee ballot? You know,
why do you think the politicians always have their own motives? Why do you think that they are moving for this?
Well, there you go. That's exactly it. Why do you think that, you know, they passed a law to shield? I mean, what they did is just basically made two sets of laws depending on how you plan on voting, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. I agree with candidate Deb Sheldon on this. And what's really alarming to me is it's not like, you know, I guess here's the thing. If the Secretary of State wanted to do her job, Alice in Wonderland Grimes, and the Attorney General, Jack Conway, wanted to do his job, and we were trying to find things to make this a fairer way of doing things and still protect privacy, I mean, what they basically did with this law to me was say, hey, we don't trust the candidates not to go and rob the people that are out of town on the absentee ballots. Because really the only people who are getting that information or even trying to obtain that information are candidates for office. So you're saying you don't trust a candidate running for office not to steal from people because, you know, they've got a list of absentee ballots from.
I'm more
now,
worried
what does
about
that say?
Well, I'm more worried about the politicians stealing after they're elected. I'm not as worried about what they do before they're elected. The problem is after they get elected, that's why we need to get more people who are private sector folks in there. Maybe they won't be so indoctrined by the establishment. That's why we need people like Phil Moffitt, who's a businessman, and the one you mentioned earlier, who's running for governor from Louisville. They are not government incumbents, and I don't really have a concern about these people stealing from the voters until they actually get elected.
Well, you know, that's true. So, I mean, you know, if they want to do their jobs correctly, then the only people that should have access to these voter lists are candidates themselves. The candidates themselves. If you want to have the party, you know, the Democratic Party of Kentucky, the Republican Party of Kentucky, let them have their copy. You know, they can give that to all their candidates if they choose to. You know, a lot of times they do. Of course, they charge the candidates for it. You know, but I just don't see, you know, the average Joe Blow, you know, lives across the street from me, going to the county clerk's office or anywhere she's got to go to request a list of those who had applied for an absentee ballot. If you want to make a law, then make sure that law is only, you know, that the only people who can get these lists are the candidates or the party itself. Then problem solved. Because I think Dev Sheldon has a good point. I know when I was in the military, and it's been quite some time ago, you know, we didn't get the information from our candidates usually until after the election. Mm-hmm. So for an absentee ballot, you know, I might have voted 2 or 3 weeks after the election. I knew my vote didn't count. Didn't even know who the hell I was going to vote for until, you know, a week or two after the election when we finally got material from them because they had no way of getting it to us. They didn't know. So, you know, I think that this is just another way to circumvent and make sure that, you know, different people do not get the opportunity to vote. The military today is more apt to vote Republican. The mm-hmm. military and those members are more apt to be the largest majority of absentee ballots. So let's just keep them out of the mix. That's exactly what it looks like to me.
Well, the truth, too, is that there are a local election like you were talking about. It was a local election like in which you ran or even a state election. Those military votes are going to play a far greater role because we always hear about the military votes in presidential elections. And I guess it's going to be a news flash if someone just tuned into the show, but we don't elect the president. A private group called the Electoral College elects the president, but yet we always hear about absentee voting and military voting, and oh, and Fox News will go orgasmic, oh, the military votes need to be counted, when that's where the least votes are going to be percentage-wise. The state races, a local race here, like I mentioned, where our good friend Phil Moff is running, military voters in his district are going to play a much greater percentage than these presidential elections.
Well, you know, I agree with you totally. I agree with you totally on this. So, you know, this is just a disturbing thing to me. The law is wrong. It's not fair to protect one group of people from having their addresses publicized like they would mine. You know, it almost reminds me of what they did up in New York with the whole gun thing last year or the year before. You know, it's okay for the paper to print out addresses and stuff of, you know, gun owners, but it's not okay for the gun owners to print out addresses of the damn reporters who publish the story. You know,
I think you should publish the names of the politicians, and this is something that my friends up in New Hampshire in a Free State Project have gotten a lot of grief over because they will publicly, and people don't like it, but again, this is called public record, they will go on much-read trafficked message boards, and they will go to advertisements, and they'll put out, like, the governor's home address and phone number and the state legislator's address and the police officer's addresses. And people get pissed about that, but you know what? They're public officials.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because let's look at this too. I mean, let's face facts here. You've got a candidate like Hal Heiner, for example. You know, he's traveling all over the state, meeting different people. He's gone all the time. You know, the candidates are expected to put out a public schedule of where they're going to be. So if they're in Owensboro, you know they're not in Louisville, right? And it's all over the paper where they're at. Every candidate has to supply their address when they run for office. So it's legitimate. You can find that online anywhere. Easiest thing in the world is to find a candidate's address and a candidate's schedule.
Yep.
So, you know, if we're going to worry about protecting a small group of people like that at the expense of everybody else, then maybe the candidates should be allowed to keep their addresses off of everything, too, so that they're not sitting there having to worry about people breaking into their house when they're thousands of miles away on a campaign trail trying to earn a vote.
I guess
why
our current mayor,
well,
I was just thinking about our current mayor, Greg Fisher, when you said that, for some reason, I thought back to the pictures I saw. No one really talked about it. To me, it showed how out of touch some of these people are. And I know Hal Hunter's a rich guy, but I know he's made it all privately, and sort of kind of Greg Fisher claimed to have made his fortunes privately. But do you remember when we used to see all these pictures of Greg Fisher when he was running for mayor and his private bodyguards in his house with him each morning? Do you remember those pictures?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
Greg Fisher's another
bodyguard,
one.
And the guy is just
yep.
freaking mayor, and it's Louisville. It's not the New York City or Chicago mayor. He's mayor of Louisville, but he's got these private bodyguards. So I guess that came to mind because he doesn't have to worry about his possessions. I guess his bodyguards could watch him.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's funny. I mean, you've got the, you know, bodyguards watch you out in public, but who's watching your house while you're out campaigning? That's just a big concern to me. I want to say hi to Martina Konecki. Just joined the chat room. Actually, a good friend of mine, one of the biggest activists in Louisville. And, man, I tell you what, this woman really works and gets things done. So, you know, it's good to have her on the show looking in. You know, let's move on to something here because there's a very interesting story coming out of the Washington Examiner. FEC Chairman Lee Goodman is talking with the Washington Examiner. Government officials are getting so concerned about conservative news outlets, especially on the Internet, they are trying to get to the point where they can curtail the media's exemption from federal election laws that would govern, you know, political organizations. Chairman Goodman says this is wrong. He says the right has finally begun to break the left's media monopoly, particularly through new media outlets like the Internet, but the left is starting to try to think of some way to bring some exemptions into place so they can shut down the right's voice. What do you think about that?
Well, I think he's right that they're just trying to shut down the different voices, and I was going to make a joke about the folks up in the Northeast, like you said, when they wanted to publish the gun owners' personal information. I was going to joke and say, don't worry, it's a newspaper, nobody's reading it, but that's the truth. I was just talking about how all these records are out on the Internet. A lot more people are on the Internet than reading newspapers, so that's pissed them off. They lost their control. They can't control this network or talk radio networks, and it used to be for you to go anywhere that wasn't mainstream. And I'm just telling this on myself a little bit. 20 years ago, I started finding out what was really going on in the world by listening to shortwave radio. And this is before the Internet took off. It's about the same time I was in college and actually designing web pages, when most people didn't know what a web page was. Al Gore had not yet invented the Internet or started raping women in hotel rooms. But you know, the media was brand new, and nobody knew anything about this alternative Internet media. But now you don't have to go grab out an old shortwave radio. It's all over the Internet, and the Internet is not the mainstream, but it is. It's the new media. It's not the old dinosaur media. So that's cause for alarm for them, because people on the Internet are more likely to be for smaller government and not for a big dictatorial government. So they want to control it. So I think this is right along with that fairness doctrine crap that they try to push down our throats.
Well, you know, I agree with you on the Internet. I think the Internet is mainstream today. I mean, you know, anybody that looks at news anymore, they're not worried about going to a newspaper. They go online and they can find 10 different newspapers with 10 different angles, and people are going to read, or people are going to find information that they want to find. And that's the great thing about the Internet. And I think, you know, ultimately the media, the mainstream media, as we always refer to it, it is on such a decline that they'll never recover. From here forward, the Internet will just continue to grow. It's one of the things that we're in the middle of right now, and I'm still not at liberty to talk about what we're doing yet. But, you know, it's
the
interesting
mainstream
because
doesn't put out real news, Ed. The mainstream, I mean, I sometimes like to just drive through the neighborhoods and laugh when I see some old Mimo picking up her newspaper, because I think, hey, she's going to see the news that I read about 3 days ago. And that's what's really going on. As I've told you on the airwaves, I call the mainstream now the junk food media, because that's all they're giving you is junk food.
Well, I agree with you. It's all become sensationalist media. I mean, you know, we talk more about Miley Cyrus and twerking in the mainstream news to try to get it ready than we do talking about the Benghazi scandal. So that's the big deal. And Martina points out in the chat room, and I think she's absolutely right, today's internet is the medium Patrick Henry would use today, or maybe even Sam Adams. If they would have had the internet then, can you imagine how much more productive they could have been and how much quicker? Because you can get the message out so fast. So, you know, that's the big thing to me. And, you know, of course, all media has benefited. There's always been an exemption from FEC rules. Essentially allows all media to pick who they want to pick as their favorite in an election. You can promote anybody. You don't have any limits, that kind of a deal. You know, we're media here, so if I want to sit here and say that, I'll pick a name, Hal Heiner, say that Hal Heiner's the greatest guy in the world, go vote for Hal Heiner, blah, 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 I can do that because I'm media. You know, I'm not, you know, but those kind of things are what they're trying to curtail now, and it's only because the right is finally getting a voice. They found out that on the internet, the right is the voice, and, you know, that's disturbing. And speaking
they
of disturbing.
A long time ago in Kentucky, Ed, I don't know if you remember this, and again, shocked, big surprise, nobody talked about this in the mainstream because it would totally go against their personal interests, but in Kentucky, and again, I'll give credit to my friends at Take Back Kentucky. We've been talking about this, my friends John Riley and Richard Lewis down there for over decades now. In Kentucky, they tried to do this media exemption thing, and I don't have my paperwork in front of me, but if you remember, they were trying to make like you had to be a large mainstream group or like the Herald Leader or the Courier Journal to be a real media, and that's something the Kentucky Constitution protects us even more than the U.S. Constitution. The Kentucky Constitution says that we are all the media. It says if you can hand out a leaflet or if you can run a talk show or put together a video piece in this information age, you are the media. And they tried and tried to get rid of that. If you remember, there was a bill, either Senate bill or House bill number one, a few years ago where they tried to say that we didn't have media rights. Do you remember this?
Yeah, actually I do. I do remember that.
And one of the people who supported that, and I have to bring this up, was Charles Merwin Grayson III, good old Trey Grayson, who quit his job as Secretary of State, got his ass kicked by Rand Paul, and then ran up to New England to raise money for Democrats. And I remember this fondly because our friends at Take Back Kentucky tried to go and pound him on this issue. Thankfully, he didn't run out of his office like Darrell Owens. He might not have the same 40-yard dash time as Darrell Owens had with Take Back Kentucky. But we tried to confront Charles Merwin Grayson III, known as Trey in this state, and he basically didn't understand that we are all the media. And when we tried to explain to him what the Kentucky Constitution said, he literally said, and I quote, the late, great Norm Davis told me this, that he honestly told Norm Davis, well, they didn't teach us about the Constitution when I was at Harvard.
Oh, I believe that. I totally believe that. That does not surprise me in the least.
This bill number one that was going to take away groups like My View Matters and small newspapers' rights because he believed that only the big mainstream media, the big newspapers, should be a media outlet. And the Connecticut Constitution said he was wrong.
Well, you're absolutely right. And to be quite honest with you, I mean, now, you know, now we've even gotten stronger with these type of ballots. Because if you remember just a few short weeks ago, the Supreme Court ruled that, you know, we are considered journalists as well. We have the same protections, First Amendment protections, as any press does. You know, so that's another step in the right direction. We're finally starting to recognize this as a legitimate media enterprise, and I think that's fantastic. You know, I do want to talk about, man, I got to go here, and I hate to because, but according to Reuters, the U.S. Justice Department under Eric Holder is actually pursuing criminal investigations of financial institutions that could put some financial leaders in jail. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder said in a video that no company was too big to jail, which, of course, is in complete contradiction to what he said just a year ago in March of 2013, you know, when he basically said, you know, sometimes the banks are too big to fail or sometimes people are too big to jail based on the comments he was making. So now we're getting to a situation from the backlash is the only thing I can figure. We know Eric Holder is gone in the very near future. He'll probably be gone after the midterms in November. I believe, and I've said this along the way, that Eric Holder will be gone in January. or be headed out the door in January. He will not finish out Barack Obama's term. You know, but he says that he is personally monitoring the ongoing investigations and is resolved to seeing them through. You know, the thing is, the Justice Department has been pursuing these so-called investigations, these criminal investigations, and Eric Holder has always made a decision not to prosecute in favor of getting a payoff, you know, billions of dollars given to the government and his backdoor cut in his pocket. I'm sure that's the way it went down. It's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. Do you really think this is a big deal? Do you really think he's honestly going to go after a banker and try to put him in jail?
I think it could be a big deal. I definitely don't think he's going to bite the hand that feeds him, and he's going to end up like the late Ron Brown on a plane that mysteriously goes down, and I guess Obama can be laughing and hucking it up and all of a sudden pretend to cry like Bill Clinton was when Ron Brown's plane went down. Because if you cross these guys, this is what's going to happen. You know, if you're a Democrat like John Arnold, you didn't do the right stuff in Kentucky, or you paid the wrong money to the wrong people, you go down. And this guy, the moment he tries to stand up to the banksters, I guarantee you there will be a mysterious car crash. There will be a mysterious plane wreck. He'll suddenly acquire AIDS from dear leader Obama, or something will happen, and we'll never hear from him again. Because I want people to go after the banksters. That's what they did in Iceland, and they put the banksters in prison. You know, people talk about, should we have more death penalty charges against people who commit lesser crimes than murder? I think maybe banksters would be a good place to start with that.
It probably would, I tell you. And Martinez asking, you know, is Eric Holder finally getting some spine? No, he's not. This is one of the biggest things that people are angry about throughout the country is the spinelessness of the Justice Department, the bank bailouts, the TARP bailouts, all the money and all the fraud that these banks are getting away with. That is some serious issues that they have to deal with in this midterm election. The Democrats are going to have to answer for backing the president on all of this crap and allowing Eric Holder not to be held accountable. So this is just political garbage to me, designed to try to act like they're doing something. As we all know, that's great. That's what Democrats do in this town anyway, portray that they're doing something and delay until after the midterm elections. If they win, nothing will be done. If they lose, then they'll try to act like they're doing something and maybe do one little, you know, throw a dog a bone deal. Who knows? You know, but that is interesting. And then I want to get into this little one here.
All right.
Real quick, I think you're going to get a kick out of this, and we'll get in our closing thoughts. But miraculously, according to Reddit user 77, he posted some images of a UPS package that was delivered to him on Monday, and lo and behold, it was parts of a drone. It was supposed to be sent somewhere else, obviously. It was supposed to be sent to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Aircraft Operations Center in Tampa. Got delivered to New York instead, but it was parts of a Puma drone. It was the wings and some electronics and some other things. UPS delivered there. UPS obviously, you know, screwed up. They went and got the package and are sending it to where it's supposed to be going. But I thought it was funny that of all things that are going to get misdelivered, you know, to the wrong address, you know, something like that, you know, maybe should have been tagged differently or better. I don't know. But I've worked at UPS for many, many years. And honestly, something of that caliber would have been labeled in such a way that would never happen. I would think that would be some sort of secret material or something that should have been labeled as such so that you can make sure that kind of crap didn't get in civilians' hands, wouldn't you?
Oh, I agree. I mean, they don't want anybody in the private sector to be able to monitor stuff, just like their drones. It kind of reminds me of when we talk about the police state and all the guys that wear the shiny little badges. They want to videotape everything you do from their cruiser vehicle, from their console there. But if you want to film what they do, and Ed, you know this more than any, if you try to confront the police and watch what they're doing, they're not going to stand for that. I mean, we saw a U of L basketball player. The poor kid had just come to this country, and he was at Derby, like 160,000 other people, and he pursued too closely to the police, so they arrested him. And this guy probably thought he wasn't in a third world country anymore since he was in the United States, but we see they like their police state here as much as they do the third world country. So they don't want any of us having a drone or a camera. That's only for the elites. You're some kind of terrorist if you think you can have one of those, you pauper.
Oh, I hear you. Here's the other amazing thing about this, too, that stood out to me like a sore thumb. Recently, as we know, David Yates, council member, Democratic council member, has went on record as trying to say that we need to get drones here. He's got some Republican backing at Kelly Downard, which really surprised me. And they were talking about the cost of these drones. You know, we can get drones for hundreds of dollars now versus thousands of dollars. Yet, in the story concerning this misdelivered drone, they mentioned that the parts received were part of a $350,000 government drone. So why is the government spending $350,000 on a drone that we can buy in a city for hundreds of dollars? What defense contractor is getting rich off of that? You know what I mean? That's the kind of stuff that we need to be looking into that we don't, or at least in my opinion. I just thought that was humorous when that was pointed out as well. Mm-hmm. We're at the end of the hour. Quick show note before you get into closing thoughts. Dale will not be here tomorrow night.
Nope.
Him and his wife are going to be doing something together. They have a birthday celebration, 30. I guess. they have a birthday celebration. So
yeah, it had the nerve to let the Gregorian calendar have a Thursday following my birthday. So there you go, Dale. Him, you had.
Well, I want to make sure everybody on here knows Dale Gillespie is on Facebook. So make sure you guys get on Facebook and wish him a happy birthday, him and his wife both. Final thoughts, Dale.
Well, we've been talking about the government, and we've been talking about the establishment, and we had a couple elections across the country yesterday. They weren't in Kentucky, but we had some primaries where, alas and behold, the Tea Party won again, and we kept hearing about the death of the Tea Party, and alas, the rumors of their demise are greatly exaggerated, and again, you're going to have a chance in about a week and a half in Kentucky to go and cast some big votes for people who aren't Tea Party or for people who are Tea Party. You can go with the establishment hacks, or you can go with the folks who actually believe in that thing called the Constitution. So that's going to be an important thing. You know, you got a lot of establishment versus Tea Party races going on, and a perfect one is the one I kind of trickled in teases on, our good friend Phil Moffitt running against a woman who said that we don't belong in the Republican Party because we're liberty folks. So again, when you have a candidate who won't take a stance on the issue, won't debate Mr. Phil Moffitt, and they want all your votes, but they don't think we belong in the party. I guess they want to have their cake and eat it too on their birthday. Well, it's time for the Tea Party to blow the candles out on their cake and say, death to your new world order, Sally Mae.
Well, for the record, Martina in the chat room said happy birthday to you, and she agrees that the Tea Party is far from dead. You know, folks, hey, really, 13 days from today is going to be a very important time in the midterm elections here in Kentucky, midterm elections across the country. But here it's going to be really interesting because, you know, we talk about the Tea Party, we talk about liberty, we talk about the Constitution, and yes, we do have candidates, you know, who are Tea Party candidates or constitutionalists. You talk about Phil Moffitt, you talk about Matt Bevin. The race that I think is going to be the most interesting is Matt Bevin versus Mitch McConnell. This is going to be another situation like we faced just a couple of years ago with Rand Paul taking on the establishment almost single-handedly. So it's going to be interesting to see how that race develops. The bottom line is a simple one, though. If you don't get involved and you don't go to vote, you have nobody to blame but yourself for the outcome. You know, what I would really like to see 13 days from today is one of the highest primary voter turnouts we've ever had. We can't say that we don't have a selection of candidates. We've got many great races out there, Shelley May versus Phil Moffitt, Mitch McConnell versus Matt Bevin, so many other races that are out there that are going to let us make a decision on where we're going to go for our future and give us the best candidates possible out of this crop. And believe me, there's very few that I would consider worthy, but the best candidate possible is the key words here. You know, get involved, make a difference, get out and vote, because that's where the choices start. We continue to say that one man can't make a difference. We know that's not true. David Adams just beat Steve Beshear with Connect, the Kentucky Obamacare program. You know, I've beat people like Jim King, Judy Green. One person can make a difference, but it's a hard road when you go it alone. It's time for everybody to stand together and get involved and make that difference as one. You don't have to agree on everything, folks, but you got to have the conversation. That's it for tonight. Dale will not be here tomorrow night as we anticipated. As I told you, it is his birthday for him and his wife. You can join Dale Gillespie on Facebook at Dale Gillespie. That is his name on Facebook. You can also join us, Louisville Politics, on Facebook, or go on Twitter and join My View Matters. That's our Twitter handle. It is time to leave this night behind. We appreciate you listening, folks. Take care. God bless. Have a great night. Talk to you later.